from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm broadcasting in studio with DC Taylor today. It's great to see you in studio, DC.
Hey, Bill, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well and I'm pretty excited because for the first time since COVID began, we have a guest in studio. And it's very odd. It's a weird feeling.
All right.
Joining us in studio today, Dan Markheim. He's a friend of mine, a friend of the program. He's a real estate, aviation, and energy attorney. He's a shareholder down at Flaster Greenberg out of Philadelphia. He travels the country as it relates to the various different things that he works on. And he also is a contributing writer to Forbes magazine, or it's all online, but I don't know if it's still Forbes magazine. It's
still called Forbes magazine.
But Dan, thank you for joining us in studio.
I can't believe it. I'm actually here. I actually see DC what it looks like.
How about that?
Yeah.
Is it everything you expected?
I didn't realize he was the second coming of Brad Pitt.
Oh, Lord.
It's kind of shocking.
Well, I'm glad this happened, and of course, Dan, you and I have been working together for many years. You've been a contributor to this program for many years as well, and it just so happened you were going to be in the area for some work with an airport, you know, believe it or not, and we said, let's get some lunch, but I said, first, let's record a show, so I'm glad you're here.
It's a thrill to be here. I'm really excited to be here.
And so much is going on in the energy industry. I'm sure you're not ever looking for content to write. I'm sure it's just all around you, but the reality is, we're in some complicated times as it relates to energy, inflation, both domestically and worldwide. I'd love to dive in internationally, your thoughts of what's going on, and then we can work our way backwards to the United States and domestically what's going on. But Nord Stream 2 has been a topic you have covered numerous times over the last couple of years. We've talked about it on this program. The previous administration, President Trump's administration, tried to shut it down, tried to eliminate Russia's dependency, Europe's dependency on Russian gas. The Biden administration has kind of removed those barriers and let it move forward. Give us your thoughts on what's going on right now as we enter the winter season with that project and other Russian gas projects.
As we tape this, which is mid to late November, things are very much in flux with Nord Stream 2. You're right. I've written about it a lot. It's actually one of the most popular subjects that I write about when I write for Forbes. It was, as you said, stopped by the Trump administration. There's only a little bit of the pipeline that has yet to be constructed. But the Trump administration went all out in sanctioning the companies and the people that were trying to complete it. And the Biden administration started out taking the Trump position and then in July totally dropped it and allowed the pipeline to go through, claiming in effect that its relations with Germany were paramount and that it would allow withdraw and allow that pipeline to go through. That's been very interesting because we haven't gotten there yet. But it seems that the Biden administration was more concerned about its relations with Germany than it's been about its relationship with Canada. Canada, of course, being our closest neighbor and our largest trading partner. But all of that seemed to indicate that Nord Stream 2 was finally going to be completed and go through until Tuesday, which I guess is the 16th of November, when the German federal agency shut down the completion of Nord Stream 2, claiming that there was some administrative problem. We don't know what that administrative problem is, but this is purely a German internal thing. It has not really hit the wires much. You haven't seen a lot of talk on it, but all of a sudden Nord Stream 2 is in flux and it has nothing to do with America. It's entirely due to Germany. Of course, Bill, what it would do is double the amount of gas and gas products that are able to be transported directly from Russia to Germany, bypassing all those Eastern European states, which is a whole nother issue we'll get to. But it will increase Europe and Germany's dependence on Russian natural gas, allow the Russians to have that energy hammer over Western Europe. And the Trump administration was very much against it for reasons like that. But Biden has done everything it can. The Biden administration has done everything it can first to prevent companies like the companies up here in northeastern Pennsylvania from being able to get their gas out of the ground and transported to where they could be exported, and then to limit the possibility of Russian domination of Western European and Eastern European energy markets.
Well, speaking again from the international context, under the previous administration, there was many years of exportation of liquefied natural gas. The number of countries receiving that liquefied natural gas grew under the Trump administration. There are calls right now domestically to shut down the exportation of liquefied natural gas, some believing that it would lower the prices of natural gas domestically. We could discuss that, whether or not that would work or not, in a little bit. But the reality is there's a whole nother second wave of LNG terminals that are proposed all over North America, right? And they could represent billions and billions of dollars of economic investment. They could represent additional pathways to get more gas to the worldwide market to help prevent these kinds of things. And it's frustrating because we could solve so many of these problems as a country by expanding those capacities versus slow footing them or trying to shut them down and relying in these situations. I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you think America's policy going forward is going to be one that actually changes the worldwide energy demographic, or you think we're going to kind of be like a turtle and just kind of pull back into our shell here?
My guess and really my fear is that it's going to be the former. We are going to change the energy demographic for the worse when it comes to our country. I believe that the overall context within which this is taking place is the idea that fossil fuels are evil, and that we have to immediately do everything possible to solve climate change, and that necessitates the limitation termination of any use of fossil fuels. Of course, the retort that I then give is, so all those PPEs that people were using for the pandemic, that was a bad thing, right? Because there are so many of them are made out of polypropylene. So what's the point of saving 4 million people if we are going to end up killing 4 billion people? I think that the administration has boxed itself in to the point where it is going to feel like it owes a lot to its far left progressive wing, so that it's going to take it out on the natural gas, oil and gas industry, because you're the ultimate boogeyman. I can take a look at you. I'm looking right at you now here in the studio, and I can see that you are the void, the face of evil, and that they are going to do everything. The Biden administration is going to do everything possible to slow walk any permitting of natural gas, to prevent any pipelines from being built, and to just do everything possible to make it very difficult to get any oil or gas out of the ground and then move it.
Did you follow along over the last couple of weeks? I forget the exact name of it, but it was essentially the climate convention with the worldwide leaders.
I think it was COG26. Is that what it was called? I think
it
was.
Yeah. So do you,
COPs, what do you say?
Did you follow along much? Like, my understanding,
kind of hard
was,
to follow along.
Well, actually, everybody built this thing up as the next Paris Climate Accord. I know domestically and internationally, President Biden was trying to get his agenda done in D.C. so he could bring it to the worldwide stage. They didn't quite accomplish that. But the other thing I got a kick out of is some of these other countries, I think it was India, that kind of put a damper in the plans worldwide, saying, like, we can't do these things. And they said, no, we're going to need to keep doing coal, or we're going to need a lot of money from these other worldwide countries. I just was curious if you'd follow along with that one much. And do you think anything is going to change? Because one of the biggest criticisms I had seen was it was just a big party for worldwide leaders to get together.
And of course, the worldwide leaders flew in a lot of private jets and their carbon footprint was extreme. The answer to your question is I followed it as much as I could. But there was so much of a sideshow going on that it was really hard.
Yeah,
whether or not anything
exactly
really came up with it,
yeah.
I don't know. I will say that when the Paris Climate Accords were announced, in the end, they, in my opinion, just made the situation worse because they called for each country to make a commitment. And the Chinese commitment was that it would continue to increase its rate of CO2 emissions until the year 2030 and then begin to bring it down. Not only would it maintain its level of CO2 emissions, but it could continue to increase its CO2 emissions at the same level as existed back when the climate accord, Paris Climate Accords were announced until the year 2030. How that helps you in terms, you've got two different, you've got two problems or two contradictory statements. One is the world is going to end in 12 years unless we end all fossil fuels. And the other is, yes, we have to be part of the Paris Climate Accords, which allow countries like China to keep increasing their use of the dirtiest fossil fuel. So if you want to be, if you really want to be part of the former and say we have to end all fossil fuels, how can you sign on to the Paris Climate Accords? Same thing with this new accord. And by the way, China is the world's largest emitter of CO2 emissions. They now exceed the United States and the Eastern European Union and the European Union combined.
Yeah. And again, it just goes to show that the continual push, especially in this country, and this belief that if we somehow or another switch completely from fossil fuels over to electric, that the world will change, when in reality they're not taking into account the entire world and the emissions, and we're all it's going to do is handicap us. It's going to hurt low and moderate income families. It's going to hurt our energy security, our dependence, our competitiveness, manufacturing, and things like that.
They're also not thinking it through just from a purely environmental standpoint. Let me give you an example. If you switch to an electric car in the state of Michigan, you think that you're doing something great for the environment. But instead of using oil, or if you could find one, a natural gas vehicle, you are now using an electric vehicle, which means you have to recharge by using more electricity. So you're going into the grid in Michigan. How is electricity generated in Michigan? 90% of that comes from coal. So you are exchanging your use of oil, or in less few cases, natural gas, for using more coal. Explain to me how that helps the environment.
That's a great point. Another thing you and I have talked, if we come back to, again, things that just don't make sense, a recent one of your articles talked about how voters and folks were rejecting renewable energy transmission lines, right? One of the things I've talked about on this program after reading a few books on it is that one of the inherent issues with solar and wind is this belief that we can build them anywhere. It doesn't make sense to build them anywhere. It makes sense to build them in very specific spots, right? Like build solar in the desert, build wind down in Texas or whatever, and ship that power up here. But there's always these efforts underway to block transmission lines, overhead power lines, to move that power to market, similar to the efforts to block natural gas lines moving around. But I understand you've recently done some stories on this, some articles on this, about how folks are actually blocking that clean energy transmission.
The latest example of that came during Election Day, when the voters in the state of Maine approved question one, which asked for the termination of construction of power lines that will take hydroelectric power from Quebec, the Canadian province of Quebec, to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, because of two things. One, certain environmental concerns in Maine, and two, NIMBYism. So now we can't even build power lines that will transmit supposedly renewable energy without much of any of a carbon footprint in order to get that from one place to another place. We can't even do that. What can we do? Instead of telling us all the time what you can't do, somebody has to tell me what we can do. And this is my problem with the environmental movement. You're always good at saying no, no, no. Okay, but you've got, in this country, 330 million people who need to be fed, need heat, need to power their lives. You have to build roads. You have to do this. You have to do that. What's the yes? All right? Don't tell me the no anymore. Tell me the yes.
You just reminded me, 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go to the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau annual dinner. And the U.S., or the leader of the Farm Bureau for the entire country, I believe his name is Zippy Dubois, and he came in and he was talking about how Iowa has the deepest inland water port, and they ship grain out of there on barges, and it works its way down the river through a series of dams and locks, right? And one of the issues that environmentalists have brought up over the years is it's disruptive to salmon, I believe salmon, as they work their way up the river. What Zippy talked about is that mitigation efforts have been underway for decades that allow 98% of the population of salmon to make it as far up the river as they need to. 2% don't make it. They want to get rid of the locks. They want the river to return to the way it was. And he said, okay, so we go from barging down the river massive amounts of grain. He said it will take hundreds of thousands of tractor trailers to move that product down the river, you know, instead of barging it down the river. And that's like the trade-off. Like, people don't think about the actual trade-off to do these things.
There appears to be some sort of fallacy that has gained traction that there is a magic elixir energy source that can be accessed that has absolutely no negative environmental consequences. Well, I do a lot of energy work in my practice. I do a lot of solar work. I do a lot of wind work. I'm all in favor of it. I mean, it's great technology, but there are negative environmental consequences to everything you do. And at some point, you have to get you have to appreciate the world you live in and not the fantasy world you wish exists and tell me, okay, within what the real world, what actually can you do and what trade-offs are you willing to make?
Well, with that trade-off talk, let's go from one topic, shale gas news and the energy industry, to another that our listeners of this program love. That's Rusty Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us today?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And speaking of gas prices and energy prices and oil in general, on this date, this weekend actually, the 4th of December, 1992, the highest gasoline prices recorded in the nation. I think we may be either equal to or maybe exceeding them a little bit now at this point in time, depending on where you are. But this is based on a national basis, because I know at the height, you know, I was traveling back and forth to New Jersey, to Fox News a couple of years ago. Yeah. This one, when the pandemic started, gasoline in New Jersey. And of course, New Jersey is a non-pump it yourself state. You know, New Jersey and Oregon are the only two states where it's full serve. Yeah. It was 79 cents a gallon. I have never seen anything like that. Yeah. So the pandemic, unfortunately, as bad as it was and as bad as it is, really served commuters really well by 79 cents a gallon. I went in with a $10 bill for my car and got like 80 cents in change. It wouldn't even take the whole $10. So based on that, this was 1992, the highest gas prices in history. The highest gas price was $3.64 nationally. So that excludes the 79 cents and the $7 ones in California a gallon. So the national was in 2012. So not that long ago, 9 years ago, 2012, $3.64 a gallon nationwide. Okay. What year did gasoline a gallon go over a dollar? That's a good question. 1980, September. It was 86. It went from 86 cents a gallon in 1979 and 78 to $1.19 a gallon in 1980. Never went under $1.19. Labor Day weekend, 1980.
Okay. All right.
The last time gas was under $2 a gallon was 2004. For 3 years, it never exceeded $1.88 a gallon. So 2004 was the last it did that.
Okay.
Gas in the 90s, the average price of gas from 1990 to 1999 was $1.15 a gallon.
Okay.
The five states with the highest average, well, let's do this first. The highest gas tax. What state has the highest gas tax in America?
Pennsylvania.
And you're living in it. Pennsylvania at 62.5 cents a gallon, 62 cents a gallon. The runner-up is California at 58 cents a gallon.
Wow.
The lowest gas tax. What state has the lowest gas tax in the United States?
I'm only going by my travels. I just remember one particular trip I took. I was driving through South Carolina, and I think it was a couple of years, just about 2 years ago, I was paying just, I think I was 99 cents a gallon. So I'm saying South Carolina.
Not in the list. Missouri. 17 cents a gallon. Missouri, followed by Mississippi at 18 cents a gallon.
Okay, that's how much the tax is.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And the top, the number one state with the highest average gas prices based on the last 10 years, the one state, DC, the highest gas price on the average over the last 10 years.
California.
California, absolutely correct. How about the lowest 10 years?
The lowest over the last 10 years. Again, I'm going to go with South Carolina.
You're close. It's the South. It's Louisiana because all the gas. So it's California. Of course, it's California. They have $8, $9 a gallon now at some of the lake resorts, all that, and Louisiana. So a little trivia this week, DC, about the highest and lowest gas prices and gas taxes. And we're pretty soon we'll be fast approaching that record of highest gas prices if things don't normalize here a little bit, DC.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rusty. It's your Fender's Fast Facts there. And this is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. And we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you, somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to the show, Gas News. It's my pleasure to welcome via the phone lines Jude Clemente, good friend of ours on the program here. He's the principal at JTC Energy Research Associates, editor at Real Clear Energy, and he's also a contributor writer to Forbes and I guess a colleague, if you will, with Dan Markheim, who's still in studio with us. Jude, welcome to the program today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Bill. It's a pleasure to be on your show once again.
Oh, well, we could fill hours together. We always have a good time, and people always ask when Jude's coming back on the program. I've been following along. You and I have been chatting through social media and Twitter. You're all over the place on this energy stuff, especially with some of the decisions the Biden administration has been making, some of the decisions internationally. Where would you like to start? What's really grinding your gears, so to speak, right now? What's at the top of your agenda?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, just we're coming off COP26, of course, interesting stuff. But it's sort of the typical thing. And you know, the amount of emissions that were created by the conference to begin with actually had a lot of climate scientists not even wanting to go to it, people showing up in private jets. I think stuff like that is actually bad for the climate change movement. I think it turns people off big time. And especially during COVID and these difficult economic times. And of course, once again, we always see that there's no mention of energy poverty really at all in this push for, you know, still developing countries to only seek wind and solar power is really just it's par for the course. And Robert Bryce actually just had an article on this on Forbes talking about it. We never mention energy poverty, and you're looking at about 7 billion people still developing countries. Like 85% of the world. So just focusing on that and how I'm working on an article for Forbes right now, how we can export natural gas to displace coal and lower emissions globally, because the reality is wind and solar power are still obviously intermittent. They're still more expensive. They're less reliable. And I think we have a great chance to export natural gas to some of these developing countries that, let's face it, need all the energy they can get.
And Dan and I were speaking on the first segment earlier in the program, much along those same lines. We were discussing about how there's a second wave of LNG facilities in the Gulf Coast area that are in various stages of permitting and development, billions of dollars of investment, but at the same time, and could bring this energy around the world and help solve these problems. But at the same time, too, there's calls domestically to stop shipping overseas in this belief that somehow or another doing so would help lower natural gas prices and energy prices in the country, which I think is far-fetched because we need to be expanding our production, not trying to curtail where we're sending it.
Absolutely. And I have a graphic on that. That's funny you mentioned that, Bill, because it's ready for Sunday night publication is normally when I put my stuff up. I think that's a good time. And hopefully I'm in a good mood if the Steelers, well, Steelers are Sunday night, but I'll be right before the Steeler game, I'll get it up. And, you know, that's exactly right. We've been exporting as much as we can here, you know, 9 to 11 BCF per day for many, many months. And it just seems like the media got caught up in this. Well, it's $60 natural gas in Asia. It's $50 natural gas in Europe. So our prices should be higher here. There's almost no connection to it. And you'll see in the graphic that I put up that, you know, the higher prices we're seeing right now for natural gas in the U.S. or a lot of it's media driven. And a lot of it is the fact now that everybody's an energy expert. If you have your own website and there's about 15,000, you know, news outlets now, where in the old days there was a lot less, but the internet has just created this sort of outlook for, hey, prices are more expensive there. They should be higher here. When that's not exactly how it's played out. If you look at the numbers. And you're right about that. You can go back to Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations on the value of exports. If we start to shut in exports, we could produce less. And a lot of our pipeline build out is related to the LNG build out. So the industrial side of things that are trying to block pipeline, I think they're on the wrong side of this. And we have about 45 new gas pipelines coming online the next 2 years. Almost 20 of them are directly related to the LNG build out. So it's good infrastructure. And I would argue, as I mentioned in my first point, it's morally an obligation. It's morally imperative to export a natural gas, which is a modern fuel as California, the greenest state, they're actually building 5 gas plants. So we have a chance to help out an energy-deprived world and produce more gas. So I think that's a great thing for us.
Jude, it's Dan. It's interesting because when you were talking about those pipelines that are being developed for export, internally, politically, that's part of the problem because you have all the people, for example, with Keystone XL saying, why are we building something that is just going to go be shipped overseas and we are going to have to deal with the environmental consequences and not getting any benefit, as if export did not produce any benefit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the job side of it. There's the lower emissions. There's helping energy poverty around the world. So it's something that we surely should be supporting. And the administration has actually been supportive. If you go back to February, Secretary Granholm supported LNG for that very reason. It's going to displace coal, which is still being utilized. This is like the year return for coal. So if you're an environmentalist, you got to be realistic and realize that if poor nations don't have access to gas, they're going to turn to coal. And we've actually been turning to coal this year under President Biden. This is the best year for coal since 2014. So it becomes an issue of not just morally helping, but lowering emissions around the world, because otherwise coal will be used. Europe is turning to coal as well, and they have very little incremental energy needs. And the last thing I'll leave you with on this point is when you see whether it's President Biden or Jen Psaki talking about energy, a lot of times it's gasoline. You know, that's the first thing that people think of: high oil prices equal higher gasoline prices, which is obviously true. But I would argue higher natural gas prices are actually more dangerous, because what happened, it's sort of the forgotten fuel. But when you have these high gas prices, natural gas, people turn down their thermostat. They don't want to heat their homes. It becomes a deadly situation. That is literal. We saw this in February last year in Texas, what happened in Texas. So high gas, natural gas prices are actually more of a problem than gasoline, which prices, which I would consider gasoline a little bit of a luxury fuel. Well, natural gas is more essential in many ways because it's based on electricity, and also it's based on heating your home. You get a cold winter, we're gonna have a real calamity on our hands.
You've really got kind of the battle of the Michigan governors here. You've got the ex-Michigan governor, Jennifer Granholm, who is now coming around, now in her current position where she has to take some element of realism. And you've got the current Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer, who is doing everything she can to shut down Enbridge Line 5, to do all sorts of things that are just, almost nonsensical based upon the extreme left-wing environmentalist position of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I'm in Pittsburgh here, so I'm a little bit away, but it's the same idea. In these higher cost energy, you block a pipeline, you shut in production, it leads to higher cost energy. Who does that hurt? It hurts, and they come out with that they're trying to support low-income Americans, communities of color. It's the exact opposite. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, they have been supporting natural gas pipelines. There was an article in Axios, I think in 2019, talking about that, because it lowers prices for poor people. And that's just something that completely gets forgotten, is some of these policies hurt, coming from the administration, actually hurt the same people that they purport that they want to help. It's the exact opposite. And not only that, it leads to higher food prices. I mean, can you imagine just Google food prices? These are the highest food prices, inflation included, since the 70s.
Just Google. Just go to the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, exactly. So I mean, this is a real problem. When you increase the cost of energy, and I would argue artificially, it trickles down to every single thing that we do. And the worst of it is when you increase food prices. It's an absolute tragedy what's happening. And I think Americans are getting a wake-up call. And I think the Virginia governorship showed that. Very strong blue state. All of a sudden, they said, we can't put up with this anymore. They turn red.
Do you think we're in Dan, not to call a spade, being the oldest one on the call here, on the call-in, but do you think we're entering a phase like during Jimmy Carter's time, stagflation, right, where things were happening and all sorts, they had never happened that way before? Do you think something's going to define – this period of time, not necessarily stagflation, but so I'm trying to play in my head like this idea of energy and inflation coming together and being a negative defining of this period of time.
That's the fear. That really is the fear because, and yes, I am old enough to remember Jimmy Carter. I was actually in college during Jimmy Carter's years. Thank you very much. That's a very, very dominant part of my life. But what, you know, to Jude's point, what you have, and one of the reasons you might create stagflation is you have this artificial increase of the essential input of really everything. You know, everything has to depend, or everything depends on energy. It doesn't matter if you're talking about groceries or you're talking about clothes or you're talking about, you know, heavy industry. It all traces back to energy. So if you put these artificial constraints on this one input, it's going to cause all your prices across the board to rise, regardless of what else is happening in your economy.
And yeah, that's exactly right. No, I'm sorry, Bill, but yeah, that's bingo. And I was going to let Dan handle that question. I was in the crib back in those days. My dad was certainly involved in that. And that's how I got into this. My dad, he taught at Penn State for 40 years and taught me about this energy poverty that nobody really mentions on. And I've been on this subject for 15 years, and it's a real tragedy because I think a lot of the companies that export, they should more take we're on the right side of moral history here, and they become on the defensive where they should be a little more on the offensive by exporting essential fuels to the world.
Let me amplify that. I have never seen an industry that has a poor sense of public relations and telling their own story than the energy industry. I mean, there are certain things that the energy industry does that are essential for human health, human life, and human dignity everywhere across the world. And to not tell that story has been just a tragedy, in my opinion.
Well, we were talking about, and I agree with you, Dan, and we've spent many time or many hours speaking about just that. Again, the things that roll through my head are down in the Hazleton area. There's a Gatorade plant, and they talk about how natural gas is used in every part of the process, from the bottle making to the pasteurization. Then there's also the Procter & Gamble plant up the road that makes some of the East Coast and North America's paper products, including diapers and toilet paper, how their plant runs almost exclusively on natural gas. I always said there should be billboards that say, if you use toilet paper, then you support natural gas. Yep. The energy industry should be embracing those things and helping people understand it, because there is that arrogance. Well, we have a couple more minutes left. I do want to hit on both your inputs or your thoughts on what's going on with the infrastructure bill and potentially reconciliation. Do you guys see this as a, you know, a positive? Do you understand? Do you think this will cause more inflation-related issues? Is this going to help move the climate agenda forward? Let's start with Jude, and then we'll come back to Dan on this thought.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for the question. That's a great question. I'd be curious to hear Dan's thoughts as well. Obviously, this has been billed as a climate thing, and there is a worry about inflation, worse inflation in 30 years. I mean, that's part of the reason why natural gas prices are up, no doubt. So I do have that concern. I mean, obviously, there's more people that know more about it than me, how that impacts inflation. But what I can tell you, and this is just another example of what gets forgotten, is this is somewhat of an economic stimulus package, obviously. What does that mean? That means more energy demand. So I've been reading articles that have been linking the stimulus bill and the spending to more oil demand, that it's going to rebound oil demand and things like that. So you're building hospitals, you're building buildings, you're building roads, you're building whatever infrastructure you're building, that depends on energy input. So if you're in any energy provider, I'm sure you're supporting this bill because it's going to take a ton of energy. And that's something that no one talks about. It's like when we talk about electric cars, well, where does that electricity come from? It's like no one even discusses it. So you have environmentalists pushing for electric cars in China. Well, where does that electricity come from? It comes from coal. So China is the big player. They never even discuss these things. So to me, the stimulus, the spending bills are certainly could lead to inflation. But the amount of energy that this is going to require And we're already a growing nation. We add, what, 3-4 million people a year, 300 billion in GDP. We're already growing. This, the amount of energy that this is going to require is just another thing that no one talks about. And that's good for all sources of energy, gas, wind, solar, all of it. But it's like these things aren't even discussed. And remember, easily our main source of electricity is natural gas at about 40%, which is double second place coal and second place nuclear.
Bill and Jude, from an economic perspective, investments in infrastructure are either non-inflationary or less inflationary than other investments, because what you're doing is you're increasing your productivity. If you have better infrastructure, you can produce more, you can create more, you can create more wealth. So the money that you spent on infrastructure from an economic standpoint is probably as well spent as possible. Some of the questions you didn't mention are these. One, in this country, can you actually build anything anymore? You mentioned at the very beginning, Bill, that I'm historically a real estate lawyer, also do a lot of work in airports and energy. We haven't built an airport in this country for 30 years. Okay, can you, in the original bill that was passed by in the House by Pete DeFazio, I believe of Oregon, put in a provision that even in the infrastructure bill, you could not expand any highway. You couldn't expand a highway. I mean, how stupid is that? Now, fortunately, that did not pass the Senate version and is out, as I understand it, of the final version. But can, in order, yes, it's important to fix potholes. Yes, it's important to redo our water grids and our energy grids, that sort of thing. But can you actually build anything new? And the unanswered question is, is the money being spent just going to go mostly to environmental consultants and lawyers, or are you actually going to see things really constructed in this country?
Jude, what are your thoughts on that?
No, that's a great point. And Dan would know more about that than me, not building like refineries. We haven't built a refinery. You know, the red tape and nuclear, everyone knows about that. But I remember the green, that kind of reminded me of the green job situation. And we've got to be very careful. That was a big deal back when President Biden or Obama took office in 2008. Everyone's talking green jobs. No one really knew what it was. But I think this idea of environmental lawyers, that's exactly what was being included in some of the green job tallies, were environmental lawyers and also secretaries. I mean, God bless them. They do great work, obviously. But the environmental lawyers being chalked up as a green job is crazy. And I would argue a coal miner has a green job, and follow me on this. I'm sure I've mentioned it to you before, Bill, but the coal miner mines the coal, which creates the steel, which creates the windmill. So a windmill begins with a coal miner. And so you can make the argument a coal miner has a green job. So we got to be very careful about some of this pork that's going around. And is it going to really help us? And I think that's a real question. We just throw money at the problem, which it seems like we continually do. You might not get the answers that you're looking for.
Well, Dan, Jude, I really want to thank you both for taking your time to discuss energy, discuss what's going on internationally, domestically, D.C., not only D.C., Taylor, but I mean sure. Washington, D.C., of course. I want to thank you both for being on here. Jude, let's start with you real quick. Where can people follow along with all the great work you're doing?
Sure. I'm on Forbes. I have an article coming out on Sunday night. Check it out there. And, you know, I have Real Clear Energy. I'll put stuff up. I do have, I do take a pro-energy approach. I think that's wise for any industry. We don't want to be anti-anything. And I think that's unfortunate what's happened with the renewable side is they've become so anti-gas. And gas is the backup, the enabling source for wind and solar. Carl Pope, who used to run the Sierra Club, was a big shale gas promoter. And they kicked him out. They got rid of him because he was promoting gas because he realized the market reality that we need more gas to help the wind and solar build out because it backs it up.
We couldn't agree more with you on that one. Dan, final thoughts? Where can people go to listen along, follow along?
I also have articles that have come out on Forbes. The latest one was about the Maine situation where they prevented power lines from being constructed that would have taken renewable energy. There's another one coming out on the situation going on between Poland and Belarus, and the Belarus's dictator Alexander Lukashenko suggesting that he's going to prevent any Russian shipments of natural gas to Eastern Europe, which is going to be a big, big problem. But you can follow me on, I put those on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I think it's at Marcella Shell Update. I'm not a big social media person, so that's kind of hard. But follow me on Forbes. That's probably the best place.
Great. Well, thank you both for joining. We're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to WellSaidCabot.com.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, the job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College. We'll see what kind of careers you can get out there in the gas and the other energy industries. But first, we'll do the top five stories on MarcellusDrilling.com. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So again, we have for you a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. Lights out. This is number five. Lights out for all ONG production in Quebec, including Utica Shale. For years, Canadian company Questerre Energy patiently waited to begin drilling on their extensive Utica Shale acreage in the St. Lawrence lowlands of Quebec, Canada. Quebec has been, like New York, completely closed to the oil and gas industry, particularly shale and fracking, and yet Questerre kept trying. As recently as March of this year, the company touted hydrogen from natural gas as the reason they should be allowed to drill in the Utica Shale. All hope is now gone. 3 weeks ago, Quebec announced it will expropriate all of the rights for all oil and gas companies in the province to drill and extract oil and natural gas. It's all being shut down, including actively producing wells.
Shutting down existing businesses in the province is something you might expect in communist China or Soviet Russia or tin horn dictatorships in South America. It's not something you would expect to see in Western democracies. Yet it's happening in Quebec. We recommend you boycott anything having to do with Quebec, including trips to the province and purchasing any goods and services from the province. The move by the so-called leaders of Quebec will cost the province and the taxpayers billions of dollars to compensate companies like Questair.
Number four, D.C., Enervest. Utica shops 340,000 acres of ore in the Ohio Utica Shale. Now, EV Royalty Partners, an affiliate of Enervest Limited, has retained Oil and Gas Asset Clearinghouse for the sale of a Utica Shale overriding royalty interest ore package against multiple counties in Ohio. Now, the package on offer includes portions of ORI in some 340,894 acres. The acreage is actively leased and developed by Encino Energy, Ascent Resources, and Southwestern Energy. Bids are due by December 2nd. Enervest is a private equity firm that owns a lot of acreage and wells in the Marcellus Utica region. Enervest has long held over 1 million acres of leases in Ohio, most of it for conventional oil and gas wells. Enervest tried to sell large chunks of its acreage for years, going back to 2012. Now, in 2017, Enervest shot to 361,000 acres and 1,100 wells in the Appalachian region. In June 2020, Enervest used EnergyNet to auction off 58,000 Utica acres. In September of this year, Enervest auctioned a package of 146,053 acres of leases for non-operated and ORI in the Utica Shale scattered across Ohio and Pennsylvania. We don't know how much, if any, of those assets Enervest ended up selling. But we do know, as of July 2019, the company still owned 1.1 million acres of leases in Ohio, D.C.
All right, the third most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past 7 days. Number three here, after Netherlands attacks Shell, company renames, moving headquarters to London. Although the story technically is not about the Marcellus Utica, it is about the parent company of the Shell ethane cracker in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, and it is instructive for politicians everywhere that increasingly love to bash fossil fuel companies. Royal Dutch Shell PLC was founded in and has been headquartered in the Netherlands for the past 100 plus years. The Netherlands is attacking the company via the courts and with threats of insane taxes. So Shell is doing the unthinkable, reorganizing and dropping Royal Dutch from the name and relocating its headquarters from the Netherlands to London. Shell gave Dutch officials a one-day notice before announcing their plans to the world. Said one Dutch official, "We are unpleasantly surprised by this news." Yeah, well, that's what happens when you attack legal businesses with insane regulations and taxes.
What do they say about karma, right?
Right.
Natural gas, number two, D.C., natural gas Bitcoin mining coming to Beaver County, Pennsylvania. Now, WT Data Mining and Science Corporation wants to set up a Bitcoin mining operation at a compressed natural gas facility owned by GeoPetro in Darlington Township. That's Beaver County, Pennsylvania. WT Data Mining proposes to build an electric generator at the CNG site and use natural gas to generate massive amounts of electricity required to power the company's computers that mine Bitcoin. Some of the neighbors are concerned about noise. What makes this installation in Beaver County interesting and different is the use of natural gas at a CNG plant. Typically, Bitcoin operators find stranded natural gas sources like oil wells not connected to natural gas pipelines to handle the associated gas that inevitably comes out of the ground along with oil. Such is not the case here. GeoPetro has completed two CNG terminals in Enon Valley, Pennsylvania, one of them on Enon Road. The terminals have the ability to supply approximately 2,500 million cubic feet per day, or 1,000 cubic feet per day, of combined, million cubic feet per day, of combined volume to virtual pipelines, that's CNG hauling trucks, to end users. The McRoberts CNG facility sits in Darlington Township at 363 Enon Road in Enon Valley, Pennsylvania. That's the facility where WT Data Mining wants to build a gas-powered electric generator and set up a computer server farm. Yeah, Bitcoin's a whole other deal in itself to talk about. Bitcoin mining.
Mining.
I know. Mining Bitcoin.
All right. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week, the end of the world. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette supports public park drilling. You know it's the end of the world when, in this case, the far-left editors of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who universally hate shale drilling, support shale drilling under public parks in Allegheny County, in the greater Pittsburgh area. Last week, MDN told you that anti-drilling zealots in Allegheny County were making yet another play, as they did 8 years ago, to get county council to pass a permanent ban on fracking under, not on, county parks. The Post-Gazette has just broken with their fellow zealots to say via an editorial that a previous experiment with drilling under Deer Lake Park by Range Resources has been a big success. The Post-Gazette editorial actually calls their fellow zealots misguided in the attempt to ban fracking under county parks given the success of Deer Lake Park. We suspect the full editorial board did not write the following, but that some rogue single editor wrote it who is about to get fired. Ooh, boy. All right. Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at MarcellusDrilling.com/email. And now it's time for the job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. And in Pennsylvania, we'll start. Halliburton Energy Services looking for cement operators and experienced frack operators out of Montgomery County. It's in the Norristown area. Diversified Gas and Oil looking for a plugging foreman and roustabouts. Multiple positions out of Indiana. That's Indiana, Pennsylvania. And Brookville. That's, Washington County. Shell looking for an emergency response technician based in Beaver, probably at the new Shell cracker plant. Kinder Morgan, looking for a pipeline specialist and welders, plural, out of Cottersport. That's Potter County. And Proconex, looking for a field technician headquartered in Towanda. ROC Service Companies, an opening for an experienced heavy equipment operator out of Washington, Pennsylvania. IMG Energy Services, an operations maintenance technician based in Tuncanic. Aerotech, a water treatment operator out of Washington, Pennsylvania. Seneca Resources Company looking for a representative of sustainability and environmental development, automation, and SCADA technicians. That's out of Cranberry Township and Brookville, respectively. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania looking for an environmental planner level 2 out of Dauphin County. That's Harrisburg. TRC Solutions looking for drillers, helpers. The geotechnical unit out of Pottsville. SG8, looking for a measurement technician out of Mansfield. In Ohio, Steelcom, looking for a senior process engineer for the oil and gas management division. It's out of New Waterford. Gulfport Energy, an opening for a measurement technician headquartered in St. Clairsville. Shale Pro Energy Services, welders, helpers, also in St. Clairsville. Tall Grass Energy, looking for an equipment analyst out of Philo. Test Oil, an opening for a field technician that'll be based in Strongville. First Solar, looking for a technician and an engineer level 1 out of Perrysburg. Halliburton, again, looking for a service operator levels 1 and 2 for their separation solutions unit out of Zanesville. And Valero, hey, it's the Valero Energy Corporation, a work-study program lab technician for their ethanol plant headquartered in Bloomingsburg. In West Virginia, Marathon Petroleum Corporation looking for a safety professional headquartered in West Union. Apex Energy looking for laborers and roustabouts headquartered in Wheeling. RDR Energy Resources looking for a pipe MIG welder. That'll be based in Clarksburg. Think Power Solutions, an opening for a transmission utility specialist for the entire mountain state of West Virginia. Southwest Energy Corporation, a field operator opening based in Jane Lou. Antero Resources Corporation, a mechanics for their midstream unit, that's out of West Union. And TC Energy looking for welders, that'd be Shielded Metal Arc and Flux Core Stick, it's out of Cameron. In New York, the DDS company looking for a land surveyor headquartered in Syracuse. Mirabito Energy looking for a natural gas and electric account executive headquartered in Albany. The New York Power Authority, a smart grid system engineer level one out of White Plains, Westchester County. New York State Electric and Gas, a supervisor opening at the construction and maintenance unit out of Olean. Canacre looking for a land agent and land acquisition specialist. That'd be the electrical transmission division out of Binghamton. Marathon Energy looking for an energy analyst based in North Syracuse. And Kinder Morgan, once again, an operations specialist opening headquartered for the entire state of New York. It's a traveling position with Kinder Morgan. And those, as DC mentioned, the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, we go to find your future. We thank you for finding your future here at the Shale Gas News each and every week on our network of stations. So we'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations for the Shale Gas News. We thank you for listening. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fenner. Thanks once again for listening to Shale Gas News.